Mental health isn't just an adult issue. Approximately 4 million children and adolescents nationwide suffer from a serious mental disorder. Yet only 20% of them are diagnosed and receive mental health services. What are the consequences of that? And why aren't we reaching all the children who suffer from mental illnesses? What are the problems and possible solutions? We will get one mom's perspective this hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and we will welcome your thoughts and questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest is Liza Long, author, educator, and mental health advocate. She is the author of the essay, I Am Adam Lanza's Mother, which went viral shortly after the 2012 mass shooting in Newtown, Connecticut. And her new book is The Price of Silence, A Mom's Perspective on Mental Illness. Good morning.
Thank you so much for having me on the program.
Well, thank you for joining us. I'd like to start first with a reminder. Why did you compare yourself to Adam Lanza's mother in the essay that you wrote after the Newtown shooting?
That morning when I got to work and heard about the tragedy in Newtown, my arms were covered in bruises and bite marks. I had just had to place my then 13-year-old son in an acute care psychiatric hospital, and I just was really afraid. I was hopeless. I had no idea how to help my son or my other children, and we'd tried for years. We still didn't have a diagnosis at that point. I think that essay was me admitting to myself that I really didn't have any solutions for my child, who I love dearly.
Oh, and you were afraid that he might possibly do something like this?
You know, I have to say that was always my first thought whenever I'd hear about something terrible, which is not at all to say that my son is a bad kid. He's an amazing kid, but he had these unpredictable, explosive, violent rages. We could never know from one day to the next what might set them off. And this type of thing, people would say, well, is it a tantrum? What is it? It was 0 to 60, with no ability to predict what was going to happen.
Yeah. Well, so he's 13 years old and has these violent rages, and you did not know really what was wrong.
No, we didn't know. At the time that I wrote that essay, which I actually titled Thinking the Unthinkable, it was picked up later under the title I Am Adam Lanza's Mother. And at the time I wrote that, we had been working with psychiatrists, with therapists, with doctors for 8 years, and we still did not know what was wrong with my son or how to help him.
Yeah, so tell us about your son's mental illness and how that affected your day-to-day life.
Well, like a lot of parents, our experience started to get serious when he was first in the school system. So when he was 5 years old, the school already had in place kind of a clear the room evacuation order in case he flew into one of these rages to protect the other children. So at that point, we knew that there was something wrong. Our journey started kind of in the autism spectrum world. A lot of people thought that what my son had was an autism spectrum disorder. And I stress this because sometimes it seems like we're trying to have two conversations about one brain. And, you know, a brain disorder is a brain disorder. People will stigmatize a condition like bipolar disorder, which my son has finally been diagnosed with, but, you know, say, well, that autism is just a developmental disorder. We're learning so much that our labels are meaningless. But back to my son's experience, things just started to escalate. And, you know, when he was small, I could contain him. If he was in a violent rage, I could keep him safe and my other children safe. But by the time he was 13, in that episode that I wrote about, he was getting bigger than me. I wasn't going to be able to stop him if he wanted to hurt himself or other people. And I think it was that fear and that recognition that, you know, we'd been through so many diagnoses, he'd been on so many medications. I write about all of this in my book, and it's so similar to a lot of other family stories. But I didn't know that at the time. I thought I was the only mom in America who was experiencing this type of frustration and this type of challenge. And as I learned after the essay went by, I'm far from alone in America today. Right. So many families are living this story.
Yeah. And he was eventually diagnosed as bipolar. Tell us how how that affected
right.
you.
That was actually the best thing to come out of the blog post. An expert in bipolar disorder reached out to me just based on the physical symptoms I described in that 750-word essay and said, I think your son has bipolar disorder. I'd never considered that. We'd had an ADHD diagnosis, you know, again, autism spectrum, oppositional defiant disorder, but no one had ever suggested bipolar. In fact, I didn't know a lot about bipolar disorder, and I didn't think it was something that could be diagnosed in kids. But sure enough, my son was diagnosed officially at his last hospital stay in May 2013 after the blog went viral, diagnosed with bipolar disorder, put on lithium. And I have to tell you and your listeners, we've had no threats of harm to self or others since May 2013, and he's back in a mainstream school. Just that one, getting the right diagnosis and the right treatment for him has made all the difference. And of course, it's a lifelong condition that he'll have to manage, but I can't tell you how grateful I am, really, for him to have his life back and my whole family to have our lives back.
We are talking with Liza Long. She is the author of The Price of Silence, A Mom's Perspective on Mental Illness. And we welcome your perspective, too. She found out that she was not alone, being the parent of a child with a brain disorder, with a mental illness. Tell us your story or ask your question, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Liza, why do you, I guess, I talk some about, I'm so happy that things are better now and that your son has the diagnosis and the treatment and seems to be doing much better. Why do you think it took so long for you to get the answer you were looking for?
Yeah, this is one of the reasons that I wrote the book, because like any parent, I was extremely frustrated. In fact, I think right now there's a hashtag that's trending that's before stage four, which is comparing mental health, of course, to cancer. That's an analogy I draw a lot too, because really what happened to me and what happens to so many families is kind of unacceptable if you think about it. A large part of the problem, like I mentioned before, is that I feel like these illnesses still aren't completely understood. So our diagnostic criteria that doctors have to work with are usually symptom-based. And whenever you're dealing with something that's symptom-based, it can take a long time. And then, of course, every child's different. Every person's brain is different. So what works for one person in terms of treatment might not work for another. We just don't understand enough about mental illness. I think that one of the first places we can attack this is through funding and research.
Yeah. And what would the consequences have been had your son or others not received the diagnosis and treatment that they need?
Well, unfortunately, and this to me is one of the big moral tragedies of our society, the consequence too often is that the child goes to jail. And people didn't want to hear me say that. I remember right after the blog post went viral, talking to one journalist who said, "No, wait a minute, you're telling me that you have to charge your child with a crime to get mental health services?" And I said, "Yeah, that's what I'm telling you." And he just didn't want to believe that. But it's true. It's not just true in my state. It's true in a lot of other states that really, to be able to access some of the care that you need for your kid who's sick, you have to charge them with a crime. So, you know, we talk a lot about the term stigma. That term gets thrown out a lot. And I feel like stigma is a problem, but especially because we've somehow decided as a society to tie a brain disorder to the criminal justice system, as if people were somehow choosing their behavioral symptoms. I can tell you, having watched my son, it's very clear to me when he's in one of those states, he's not choosing to act that way. It's absolutely the illness.
Yeah. And you mean that you would have to have your child arrested in order for him to get treatment because of that harm to himself or others clause?
Well, it's a little different for kids. You're thinking, I think once they turn 18, which is a completely separate and kind of scary issue. In fact, my son and I, now that he's 15, we talk about this all the time about, you know, I want power for healthcare when he turns 18, just in case he does have another episode. I want to be able to care for him in the medical system and not in the criminal justice system, which is where far too many of our people who have mental illness end up. It's just wrong. It feels wrong to me.
Yeah. But so in terms of, though, your child is, you know, having a fit of rage and is actually injuring you, and that's not enough to get treatment or to get him into the system?
A lot of times, again, because of gaps in our system of care, you can't get the services that you need through private insurance. I have great private insurance. I'm very fortunate in that regard. But some of the services that my son needs to function, things like psychosocial rehabilitation, are not available unless he's on probation for a crime. That's what I mean.
I see.
Yeah.
And what do you mean by the price of silence?
Well, I think the price is the personal tragedies that families are living every day, losing children to suicide, but also the very public tragedies like Newtown, which are so rare. I have to stress that these mass shootings are very rare outlier events. The real threat is more often self-harm, suicide. But this is the price that we're paying as a society, because we've chosen to treat not just our adults, but our kids who have mental illness in jail. And it's a high cost. It's a high cost when you think of 1 in 5 kids who might have a serious and debilitating mental disorder before the age of 18.
Mm-hmm. But is the silence, the people are truly not talking about this because of the stigma?
I certainly cannot take full credit for this, but it seems to me like people are talking more and more.
Yeah.
And I think that's a positive step. Stigma starts with self-stigma, when you can't even talk to yourself, or when you can't admit to yourself that you've got a problem and that you need help. But the challenge now that we are talking is we've got to move from talk to action. This is just something that really, really needs us to take action.
Well, we'll talk about some of the action that is needed, and we'll welcome any thoughts or experiences that you might have for our guest. She is the author of The Price of Silence, A Mom's Perspective on Mental Illness. Liza Long wrote an essay that went viral after the mass shooting in Newtown, Connecticut, when she wondered if her son, who was subsequently diagnosed as having bipolar disorder, could have done a similar thing. She found herself at the center of the debate over children's mental illness, and she ended up writing this book, The Price of Silence. And we welcome your experience with mental illness. Do you have a child who struggles with it, or have you yourself done so? What changes do you see as needed for how we treat and care for people who have mental disorders, children in particular? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are getting a mom's perspective on mental illness and welcoming your questions and your perspectives, too. What fixes can we make to help children with mental illnesses? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Liza Long is the author of The Price of Silence. And let's go to the phones. Our first caller is Bonnie in Rice Lake. Hello, Bonnie.
Hi, Joy. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things, just to let you know a little bit about myself, is I was an EBD teacher, which is an emotional behavioral disorder teacher. Plus, I'm also currently a school psychologist. And from the school's perspective, we see children with a plethora or whatever of mental illness. Many people on the autism spectrum, bipolar. I think I have a student who may be schizophrenic at this point. And trying to find them help is really frustrating for the school district. I work in a small district. The mental health providers in the area are all dealing with adults normally. So the parents have to go over 60 miles to try and find anyone that's worked with children. Mm-hmm. And then also to build that partnership with the mental health community, the schools and doctors, schools and parents, I think is so important. But it's really hard to do.
Yeah, and that's interesting that, you know, this is rural Wisconsin. Bonnie is seeing students with mental health issues, but it's hard to get them help in the system, Liza. That's a common problem?
Yes, I'm totally nodding my head with everything she's saying. Our school district is also fairly rural. I live in Idaho, and your caller highlighted a few of the problems with our current system. First of all, the schools really are tasked with dealing with this, and also law enforcement, but you know, without maybe the additional resources that they need. So in my son's case, they actually pulled him out into a pull-out program where he wouldn't even be able to graduate from high school. All of the kids with emotional disturbances were in the school, and I wrote an op-ed a few weeks ago where I asked, what's the logical consequence of pulling all these mostly young men into the school setting where they'll never socialize appropriately? I think the consequence is prison. I wrote a lot about the school-to-prison pipeline in my book. Even though we were living it, it still shocked me. But then the other challenge your caller highlights is just the lack of treatment options, the lack of providers. We have a crisis in child psychiatry right now. And in fact, some of the very best child psychiatrists don't even need to take insurance. I know of parents who spend the equivalent of a Harvard tuition every year flying their kids back and forth to see some of these preeminent child psychiatrists, and it's so hard to even get in to see somebody just because of exactly the things your caller mentioned.
Yeah, I know someone, a relative who wasn't a child, but a very, very young adult who tried to take his life. Almost a miracle that he didn't succeed in that. But when he was relapsing, it took forever to try to get him into the system, even when there's history.
Right.
Yeah.
That's exactly it.
And in a shortage of psychiatrists is one of the reasons we hear. Is that a problem?
Yeah. It is a problem. And you know, it's interesting, too, because we talked about stigma earlier, but that seems to even extend into medical school, where I talked to one child psychiatrist who said she had strongly been discouraged from going into that field because one of her professors said, well, you're so talented. Why would you choose something like child psychiatry? But she, like many people who do choose the field, had family members who had struggled with mental health issues, and she wanted to make a difference. But even now today, there's just a shortage, and especially in rural communities, it's a real challenge.
Yeah. Bonnie, are you still with us?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, so, I mean, Bonnie, what you're trying to get help. It's hard to get help. So what ends up happening with the students?
Well, it depends on the student. I've had one student where your guest was talking about having to get into the legal system, and that literally was the only way that we could get help. Mm-hmm. Was to have to call the police, which was very frustrating because I certainly don't want to criminalize these children. But the only way that we could go to get help from a psychiatrist and a day treatment eventually and then back into the school district was to call the police. Other ways that we've done it is I've made many, many phone calls to doctor's office going, we need help. I have a parent permission to talk to the doctor, and we need help, and we need it now, and I have to be very persistent, but it's very frustrating.
Yeah, do you notice are the students eventually getting the help they need, or are the students ending up in you know, the justice system, or just dropping out of school? Do you have any experience with that?
Well, I've had experience, I guess, with all of that.
Yeah.
Some of the kids have gotten help. And like I said, I try and build a partnership with the doctors,
mm-hmm.
so that it's not just school standing alone, but we look at the entire child. And that's great because that works the best. But I've had other kids that have dropped out. And then I've had some that I've actually, you know, gone to visit in jail.
Yeah, that's sad, isn't it? Yeah. But Liza, your son is now attending high school, or
yeah, he's back in a mainstream school, and I think that that's really the solution that we want for our kids. Whenever we can have that solution, is, you know, find the right diagnosis, get the right treatment. It's life changing. My son says that all the time. He's become a pretty powerful advocate for himself, which he needs to do. That's, he's going to have to fight for his rights and for what he needs for the rest of his life. And he says lithium gave me my life, and it was just as simple as getting the right diagnosis and the right treatment for him. I just got back from parent-teacher conferences last week. I honestly never thought this would happen, where every single teacher I met with said, oh, your son is such a joy to have in class. Sorry, it makes me cry to even think of that after so many years of struggling.
1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org if you would like to share a question or a perspective on children and mental illness. We have a Richard on Facebook who says that this is the fallout from, and this is going to make you sad or mad, abysmal parenting skills. He says the hippie generation, and not being taught that there are boundaries at a young enough age, is literally making our kids crazy.
Yeah, you do hear that a lot. And, you know, I have three other children. So in my case, I sometimes, this might sound flip, and I don't mean to sound flip, but I sometimes joke that my oldest son is president of his high school and, you know, in National Honor Society, and that he's that child, the concert pianist. And I do remember once going from a National Honor Society meeting over to the jail. So apparently I was a really great parent to him, but a terrible parent to my son who has mental illness, when in reality, like my kids will tell you, the bulk of our resources go to my son who has mental illness, bulk of my time, the bulk of my financial, you know, mm-hmm. all of that. But your, to speak to that question of parenting, I do have to say that parenting skills are really important, and we don't want to shortchange that. Whole family therapy can be really effective, and I myself have taken several parenting classes. The challenge is that a class like, say, Love and Logic isn't going to work with a child who has a brain disorder, because you're not dealing with logic, for starters. So parents can feel frustrated or even sometimes beat themselves up. I know we moms are really good at that, aren't we, at saying, oh, if I could do something different, I could help my child. But in many cases, I hope that your that commenter will understand that parents are doing literally everything they can for their kids.
Now let's go next to Greg in Roscoe, Illinois. Hello, Greg.
Hi.
Yes.
How
what is
you?
Your? Yes, I'm good. What is your experience or question?
Well, in 1995, we lost our 14-year-old son to a car accident.
I'm sorry.
And there was just a lot going on in the family, and my wife became very depressed. And we didn't know, but at the time, my 10-year-old daughter just started acting out, doing things that she would not normally do. She used to be the, you know, teacher favorite because she was such a sweet little girl. And then she just started doing very strange things, and we didn't know what to do. I was trying to be firm, but with love, because I knew she was hurting. But even as the years went by, she's 15, 16, and she's still getting drunk and smoking pot. So we took her to a psychiatrist, and he diagnosed her with bipolar. And through those meetings, she finally told us, for all those years that Patrick had died, she blamed herself because she had asked God to just take him, because he was kind of a trickster, not a mean guy, but he used to play tricks on her. So she felt her prayer got answered, but he died the next day. And so she actually developed a bipolar disorder. She's 31 now, doing great. My wife, she sat on the couch for 2 years and literally just saw in 2D and gray colors, and I finally convinced her to go into a group, and she had almost no serotonin. Myself, I had to put my feelings, my grief on the shelf and try to keep my family together, which we still are. But then I've developed some depression down the road that's been dealt with as well. So sometimes it's like, you know, I just thought Chris was going through a phase after 4 or 5 years of the grief, but it really wasn't. Mm-hmm. She blamed herself for Patrick's death. That was a hard one.
I'm so sorry for all the trauma that your family has gone through. But it turns out it is, Liza, something that can affect the entire family.
Oh, I think that your caller's story illustrates perfectly how you can look at a situation that's really horrible and tragic, but then turn that around. And it's because your caller had the courage to help both his daughter and his wife to mm-hmm. get treatment for brain disorders. And I mean, you know, that's exactly what we want for people, is to feel like they can reach out and process trauma. And certainly trauma can be a trigger for mental illness. And I think that your caller's, he also makes the point that talk therapy can be so effective. I mean, the fact that his daughter was able to process that initial reaction to her brother's death and then to move on and to lead a successful, happy life, that's really what we all deserve, and it is a whole family problem.
And that being said, I'm not trying to be flip, but signs of I think of it as like teen rebellion, where you're, you know, smoking and experimenting
right.
and maybe staying out past curfew. These are not necessarily common signs of a mental illness necessarily.
No, exactly right. And I think, you know, that's one of the challenges, even back to that Facebook comment that you got. People who haven't really experienced this in their own families, it's really difficult for those of us who are experiencing it to communicate with them and say, no, we're not talking about just ordinary teen behavior. It's mm-hmm. it's really it's something else entirely. Again, I have that older son, and I've gotten a little bit of teenage attitude from him. But you know, just with his brother who has bipolar disorder, it's just completely different set of problems. I think one thing we could all do is maybe stop judging each other when we don't really understand the complete situation.
Anne Marie on Facebook says we do need to make sure that kids are properly diagnosed. But I tend to think a lot of kids are just kids that need direction and not mind-altering medication. It scares me to think that what their underdeveloped brains may suffer from by those meds.
Yeah, I cannot say that I'm anti-medication, but I'm really sympathetic to that poster's view about our current class of drugs and how little they're tested in children. I spent a chapter in my book looking at some of the challenges with what we call atypical antipsychotics. There's some really horrible side effects. And when we look at medication compliance, I think, you know, if I had to take a medication that turned me into a zombie, and I've seen that happen with my own son, I wouldn't think that was really a cure for the problem. And so starting with correct diagnosis, and I do think there's a great book, Saving Normal, by Alan Francis, where he really deals with that exact issue at great length. He was the task force leader for the previous edition of the DSM, which psychiatrists use to diagnose adults and children with mental illness. And he kind of makes the same point that there probably is an over-diagnosis bias, or at least over-medication bias, because mm-hmm. what is normal, right?
Yeah. Well, did your son have to go through different meds and dosages before you found the right one?
Oh, yeah. I call it almost a will-it-stick approach to medicine, which is really frustrating to experience as a parent. And in fact, even maybe a little dangerous. Like for the period where they thought my son had ADHD mm-hmm. And put him on stimulants, his rages were much more severe when he was on stimulants. And that kind of makes sense to me now, thinking that, oh, yes, if it was a manic rage. And it's funny because I use the word rage, and that's really what it is. When you read the symptoms for bipolar, what they'll say is extreme irritability. And that may be where people think that it's not such a big deal. But we're not talking about just a grumpy kid here. We're talking about an explosive rage, so where holes are in walls and things are getting broken.
Yeah, let's go next to Liz in Sheboygan Falls. Hello, Liz.
Hi. I just want to say yes, yes, and yes, some more to what the Liza is saying today. When the shooting happened, I came into work and looked at my coworkers. They looked at me, and I said, that could be him next time, my stepson. And they said, we didn't want to say that, but that's the first thing we thought. And the difficulty, there's so many things you're hitting on, but your choices when a child is acting up like this and destroying the walls, hurting himself, running into walls, your choice is to call 911, and they give you an option to press charges, which means now he has a jail record, or he goes in for another week of psychiatry evaluation in the hospital and comes out, you know, the last psychiatrist at a very well-known hospital in Milwaukee said, he doesn't have empathy, and if I had a pill for that, the jails would be empty. Mm-hmm. And I thought, look how mental health is so linked to jail.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, now imagine I'm a stepmom, so some of the stigma you're hearing as not a good parent or not doing the right parenting, multiply that by 10 when you're a stepmom, because they assume that you can't get along or don't have the skills. I did end up getting a divorce because I'd like to bring up blended families. When my stepson pulled a knife on my daughter, I have custody of my children. Now, their dad would have taken them from me.
Right.
So I had to remove myself from the situation because it wasn't safe for the children. But I didn't even have a choice to stay. So it's really, if we can get help, we need help. If teachers are stumped and doctors are stumped, we're not psychiatrists, and yet we're parents and we work full-time. You know, we cut hair or we do regular jobs. How are we supposed to get the resources that we need for these children, mm-hmm. unless we just press charges when we do call 911?
I'm so sorry. I'm
Liza. Right. No, and your caller brought up a touch point for me as well, because I did, in fact, lose custody of my younger two children for a while as a result of that blog post. Their dad did go in and convince a judge that they were in danger from their brother, even though, and I always stress this for families, I had worked hand-in-hand with Child Protective Services in my state for years. I had invited them into my home. We had crafted a safety plan together because I was concerned about the safety of my younger children. Even with that, because their brother was so unpredictable and violent, my younger two children were removed from my home, and I was told that I had to place my son in residential treatment or I would not get my younger two children back. Now, the real irony of that is that residential treatment is a fantasy in my state that only exists in that judge's mind. So essentially, I had no options. Fortunately, we were able to bring in a child psychiatrist who worked with our family, and I did get my children back. But there's the personal price for me that my family paid, and it was a harsh one.
And when you say residential treatment was not the reality, I mean, that's not that common even in more urban areas, isn't that right?
It's true. I mean, what we did is we closed the mental institutions, and you know what? They weren't that great of places. They really weren't. Mm-hmm. But we closed them, and then we replaced them with nothing. So like your caller just said, what we really replaced them with was jail. If you want to create stigma for an illness, criminalize it, which is essentially what we've done.
Talking with Liza Long. She is the author of The Price of Silence, A Mom's Perspective on Mental Illness. She has a son who has been diagnosed with bipolar disorder, but that took a while. And she is the author also of an essay that went viral shortly after the 2012 mass shooting in Newtown, Connecticut. Maybe you read it. I Am Adam Lanza's Mother, because she was so concerned that this is something that her son could have possibly done. So we are talking about mental illness in children, the problems, the possible solutions, and welcoming your questions and your perspectives. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking about mental health and mental illness in children. Approximately 4 million children and adolescents nationwide suffer from a serious mental disorder, yet a very small percentage of them are actually diagnosed and receive treatment. We're talking about the consequences of that and what fixes are needed in the system to get children the help that they need. And we're welcoming your questions for Liza Long, author of The Price of Silence, A Mom's Perspective on Mental Illness. More calls for you, Liza. Nancy in Verona is next. Hello, Nancy.
Oh, hi. Let me take you off speaker. Are you there?
Yes, go ahead, Nancy.
Well, I just wanted to talk a little bit about the importance of several things, and one of the things is seeing mental wellness as a continuum. And we all go back and forth on this continuum. And the mother, a couple callers ago, referred to her son's rights. And we all have the right to thrive. The final bastion of discrimination, I think, in our culture, you know, is really the mental health, the discrimination against people who are experiencing difficult mind states. And it's really the discomfort that we feel in the presence of someone who is experiencing a difficult mind state can create more problems than the difficult mind state itself.
Yeah. What do you think of that, Liza?
I was just nodding my head in agreement. First of all, I love the word discrimination, mm-hmm. and I would personally love to see the word stigma replaced with discrimination, because what we're really talking about for a lot of people is a civil rights issue, and it is discrimination. I feel like my son was discriminated against in the school system, for example. And I also love how your caller talked about mental wellness. And I've thought a lot about this, both as a mom and as someone who's, you know, had some pretty dark periods in my own life. And I think what would be helpful in some senses would be to take serious mental illness like schizophrenia or bipolar disorder and understand those as, you know, as physical illnesses, which they are. We're seeing more and more. I'm sure you read the schizophrenia article about, well, there's actually 8 different types of schizophrenia. We're seeing where these diseases are in the brain, mm-hmm. and how they affect neural functioning. But to take that idea of serious mental illness, treat it like an illness, but at the same time, all of us need to focus on our mental wellness. That's just like diet and exercise for us, right? We all owe it to ourselves to take care of our mental health. But for me, as a mom of a kid who clearly has a neurobiological disorder, I also want a medical solution for my son. And so those two things, I think, would be helpful for us to pay attention to serious mental illness, but also, yes, we need to focus. All of us need to focus on mental wellness.
Thank you so much, Nancy, for the call. Liza, how do you think, you mentioned that you feel your son was discriminated against in school. How can schools better adapt to help students with mental illness?
That is such a great question. It kind of circles back to our first caller, Bonnie. And I think that schools could be a powerful force for change, and they're certainly dealing with these issues on a day-to-day basis. As Bonnie mentioned, my own mom is a classroom teacher in first grade, and we have quite a few conversations about how we could do things differently. For starters, I think it'd be really helpful if the school day could match the work day for a lot of parents. I think that would really be helpful. And then I also think it'd be great if we could actually build in therapies into the school day for kids. So have occupational therapy there, have talk therapy there, and then more one-on-one aids to really help classroom teachers out. So instead of pulling kids out of the classroom, and sometimes you have to do this, sometimes they've got to be separated from the mainstream population, but whenever possible, and this is actually federal law, by the way, keep the kids in the classroom with an aide so that the teacher can instruct, but the aide can then be there in case there are behavioral issues. All of these things would help, and we could do it in our existing infrastructure. And it would sure be a lot cheaper than sending kids to jail, by the way, a lot cheaper.
Let's go to Susie in Price County next. Hi, Susie.
Good morning. Say, and so, yes, as the last caller had said, in regards to what is going on in our not only in the United States, but in Wisconsin and in rural Wisconsin. Just a couple things. Number one, I think I have to look at the last caller and say, what do we ask the schools to do? We have to realize that the schools are given many, many, many duties besides educating. And at this level, I agree that the schools can be very helpful, but, and I don't mean to be, get out and vote for your legislature, but vote for someone who supports those issues in the school and just supports the schools. Number two, in rural Wisconsin, we have to look at, I think the lady from Rice Lake mentioned, we need to collaborate with other agencies in what we call wraparound. We have to take the student that has a mental health issue, and we have to wrap around that child. I kind of love that word because it seems like it's cocooning that child and protecting that child. But get the nursing, get the teacher, get the social worker, everyone on board as a team to work with that child. We don't have the resources in rural Wisconsin, and so we have to become quite unique in developing our own resources to protect and make sure this child is offered just as much as any other child in their city or in their town. The other thing is, and one final thing is, all communities in Wisconsin, all counties in Wisconsin have to do a community needs assessment. And if you would look back at all the community needs assessments that are presently in place in Wisconsin right now, I would almost bet you that 90% of them are looking at their communities and saying, we have issues with mental health in our community and AODA, and we need to step up and we need to work on that as a community.
Susie, thank you so much. Susie didn't mention that she is a public health nurse, and she sees a huge need for help for children with mental health health issues, even called it a disaster. She says, vote, assess, and collaborate. What do you say, Liza?
I, first and foremost, wraparound works. We know wraparound works. What she described is really exactly right. It's the model that we need, that big community hug that comes around a child and a family, and it works. Milwaukee has a model for this. Wraparound Milwaukee, I wrote about in my book. It's a unique managed care program that does exactly what she's describing. But again, there's that challenge of resources in rural communities, and it's a big problem in my state with rural communities, also in Wisconsin. But I would encourage your listeners to look at Wraparound Milwaukee and exactly right. Vote for legislators who get this. One child, one plan. It's such a powerful model for changing lives.
Let's go next to Sarah in Milwaukee. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, thank you. I've been bipolar since I was a child with my first hospitalization and first suicide attempt at age 15. Mm-hmm. I just want to emphasize with their audience that most people with mental illness are not violent, according to the American Psychiatric Association. It's a chemical imbalance that can be treated with medication. I just wanted to make that point.
Right. All right. Liza, I guess your son did have violent rages, but that doesn't mean everybody who has bipolar disorder does?
Oh, of course not. And your caller is entirely correct. I mean, I'm a little frustrated myself that we only seem to really focus on mental health issues when there's a really outlier event like a mass shooting. And it is true that mass shooters do tend to have mental illness, but certainly the vast majority of people who have mental illness are not violent. And the real threat when they are is violence towards self. So when we talk about violence and mental illness, in many cases we should be talking about self-harm and how we can prevent that. I will say, though, I have been a little controversial for talking about violence in my own son's life, and it's a reality for families. Sometimes, as a symptom of bipolar disorder, like I mentioned before, it's not excessive irritability. It's violent, explosive rage. And families who are dealing with that, I feel like we should be able to speak out and get help for our kids.
We have Stephanie in Cedarburg emailing. I think pediatricians and family doctors should add basic mental health screening questions to their regular checkups. This will help children understand what mental health issues are and that they are health issues, and that what they may be feeling is normal and not their fault. We need to raise children to be comfortable talking about their issues and asking for help. What about that idea?
Well, it's something I wrote about in my book. I feel like intervention with pediatricians is one of the best things that we could do, adding it to the well-child checkups, just like your emailer said. And really, it was a frustration of mine because I noticed some pretty significant differences with my son when he was very young, when he was a toddler. And I would go to my pediatrician, and she'd say, well, he's just a boy, or, oh, he'll probably outgrow that. And I wrote about one piece of advice that I got where with these rages he was having. It was around 3 or 4, she actually recommended that I take all the sharp cornered things out of his room and get an outside lock. And I said, wait, you're suggesting I just put him in his room with a lock on the door outside? She said, yeah, just, you know, let him wear himself out. Mm-hmm. It seemed like tremendously bad advice to me. I was a young mom, but, you know, still, I didn't see how that was going to help my child.
Yeah. You write in the book that you like Wisconsin's approach to juvenile justice, one that incorporates the whole family. Is this something that could be implemented elsewhere?
Yes, yeah. And again, we've talked about that whole family therapy need. It's a whole family problem. And sometimes parenting is implicated. You know, imagine how frustrated you would be if you were dealing with this on a daily basis. I just really don't judge any parents. I think what we need to do is to support parents and families, and that includes medical support, that includes community support. It's just really not there right now.
Yeah. So how optimistic are you that we can develop a healthier approach to children's mental health?
Well, that depends on the day. Mm-hmm. And on, you know, I did testify to Representative Tim Murphy's forum after Newtown, and have been involved on the national level in trying to advocate for better systems of care for kids and families. And some days I'm quite optimistic, and then some days I'm really frustrated. I think that, you know, I wrote 2 years ago it was time to talk, and I don't think it's time to talk anymore. I think it's time to act.
Yeah, and we do have another minute to go. What is it that you think we should act on first?
You know, again, that's controversial, and that's a subject of discussion, but I do believe that H.R. 3717, Representative Murphy's bill, Helping Families in Mental Health Crisis Act, would be important. And I'm also a founding member of an organization called Treatment Before Tragedy. I think the very first thing we've got to do is to stop treating mental illness in jail. End of story.
Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me today.
Liza Long is the author of The Price of Silence, A Mom's Perspective on Mental Illness. She was also the author of that essay that you may have seen that went viral after the Newtown, Connecticut mass shooting in 2012. I am Adam Lanza's mother. Talking about the problem of undiagnosed, untreated mental illnesses in children, and how we can better help children who suffer from mental disorders. Thanks to Christy Taylor for producing and directing this program. Thanks to Brianne Chasseau for on-air production. Thank you for listening. I hope you join us tomorrow night at 6 for a special program from American Radio Works, The New Face of College, where we will explore how universities are adapting to their new students. That's tomorrow night at 6.